This is KWAI Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
And good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Lovely day here in Hawaii. We've had some good rain for those of you back there still struggling with the snow and sleet and hail. We even had hail here a little bit, so just absolutely beautiful. The rain, the monstrous clouds and what have you. And we got a lot to talk about today, and hopefully you'd care to join in. I noticed that we're having some problems with the phone lines. But, by the way, if you want, you're having struggle to listen to the show or listen to KWAI, You can now go to, as always, 24/7 now, though. Go to KWAI1080AM.com. That's KWAI1080AM.com. And you can get it on your phone, your iPad, or your computer. And or if that all fails, then go back to the radio. But for those of you that get some intermittent signals and what have you, feel free to listen in. And the station really needs your support. Quite often, people, I talk out there on the street, and they say, well, the media isn't telling us much. The media isn't doing this. So here's how you can combat that and dilute that. What the media isn't telling you is participate. And if those of you that have companies or small companies or a need for advertisement or interested in doing a show, call us at KWAI 1080 AM or go to the website, and it's available, like myself, sit here able to talk to you, and it's affordable. So no need complain. There's a solution right at your fingertips. So anyway, as you know, coming up, Dr. Martin Luther King's, the day of his assassination, took place, and there is going to be a people's walk, and I have Marsha Joyner, who is participating or help sponsoring or put it together, so I'm going to invite her on for a couple of minutes and have her tell us about this. Good morning, Marsha. How are you?
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us, what is the people's walk?
To talk to you, as always. Friday is the 46th commemoration of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, and we're having a people walk. The original Four People's campaign was started when Dr. King realized that poor people, no matter what color they were still poor, and began to organize people of all colors to petition the government for better wages, better housing, better economic opportunities. And, of course, he was much maligned for that. The Reader's Digest said it was an insurrection. The New York Times said he was no longer useful to his people or to the country. So when they started talking about poor white people, that there were people other than blacks that were suffering. So we are locally are going to do a people's march because we have lots of issues. Among them, our minimum wage, people sleeping on the sidewalk, and just so many issues. So we are having a walk on Friday, and it begins at any number of places, at the lawn next to HGEA on Mililani Street, on the lawn next to the police department on Baritania Street, on the lawn at on the 4th Street Mall in front of the cathedral, and for handicapped people in wheelchairs, it begins right in front of St. Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's everything. Oh, Miller Street in front of the, there's a lovely place there in front of the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to begin the march where you can get in the walk wherever is comfortable for you and walk to the Capitol. We want to get the Capitol. We want to start the walk at 3:15 and be at the Capitol by 4 o'clock, 4:15, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's entertainment, and we're making a soapbox for anybody that feels inclined to have something to say. The governor is issuing a statement for a moment of silence at exactly 6:01, and to have all the church bells rung across the state. We have people walking on each island, so that we make a statement of the power of the people. We have got to take our power back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those times when we can do that, should do that. Incidentally, the Capitol will be open. There's art in the Capitol, so that means all the offices will be open. If you want to go see your legislator individually, they will be there in their offices. Mm-hmm. And if you want to, you know, do mm-hmm. your issue, but we do encourage you to come, join us, bring your issue, bring your signs, whatever it is that you want to say, mm-hmm. and join us.
So they can,
but again, at 6:01, there will be this moment of silence, because that's the moment that Martin Luther King was killed. Mm-hmm. 6:01, and the church bells will ring mm-hmm. across the state. Thank you, Carol.
All right, well.
Thank you.
Again,
I
that's.
I wish I could hear you clearly, but it's not clear.
You must not have your.
I will listen to you on the computer.
Okay,
thank you so much for all you do.
You're welcome.
And I'll talk to you soon. I expect you to bring your issues, too, especially about what. Well, we'll talk about it, but just bring your issues also.
Is there any room for the issues I have? Anyway, I have so many issues. Anyway, thank you for joining us, and feel free to call back. But again, if you're having problems with the phone lines, I guess there shouldn't be a problem with the lines in the near future. But again, a little interesting from a personal standpoint. When you listen to radio and you listen to various shows and we think we've grown. Let me tell you about racism and why all of us should frown on it and should simply anyone and have zero tolerance for it. Zero tolerance. I grew up in Mississippi. And in that state, it's a state of mind, not only just a state within the United States, these United States, it's a state of mind. And that state of mind is isolation. And you grow up and you think everything is black and white. And you never even dare, because there's no incentive or no need, or you're not told to think about others who are experiencing the same thing, because you're busy trying to figure out why the hell someone would do what they do to you because of your skin color. Fortunately, some things have changed, and fortunately, people do right, and there are honest people and honest, caring people. And you learn that today, for me, Martin Luther King was absolutely a pivotal point in my life to just know. I used to look and marvel at him. Well, first of all, I thought he was one of the best-looking men I've ever seen. So I'm always a little frustrated when they show some Slick Rick, little spaghetti, thin-looking, lame, pale kid. He's the most sexiest man in the world and the most handsome in the world. And I just think, well, okay, that's a continuation of the old crap. But follow this. As you get older and you move about and the shackles of racism tend to get a little loosened, you learn that women, see, when I was young, I would never have thought that knew nothing about women's rights or anything or a religious right. It was you're black and they're white and that was it, baby. That was it. You didn't have time to be thinking. You're so busy trying to figure out the crap that they were dishing to you. And then you learn there are people that have a sexual orientation. There are people that of their religion, of their faith. Then you learn, because you're taught if you're either brown skin and black or colored at the time or Negro, or you were white, and you don't know that there's so much hatred. There were hatreds you learn as you grow older. There's hatred toward Jews. There's hatred toward Mexicans. There's hatred. So a lot of you I know find this strange, this thing called Dr. Martin Luther King, the parade, the march, the walk, the civil rights movement. But the reality is, if you've had your head stuck in the sand, or you have learned to make a little money, or you're enterprising, these things probably won't affect you. But that's the danger of racism. You never can ever quantify its impacts until days later, years later, months later, or centuries later. So I'm always looking back and thinking, and it's a painful feeling when people then project or say or draw the conclusion and suggesting that civil rights is a black thing, when in fact we know now that civil rights and women's rights, abortion rights, and all of that. That's why we have to be so vigilant constantly. It never stops, racism. And you don't know its full impacts until you recognize it later. Well, you can predict the impacts. You can suspect the impacts. But to quantify them, you'll never know. So not to take it lightly. Caller, go ahead and if you have a comment or question.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
It doesn't matter. Just go ahead and talk.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead and talk. Just if you have something to say, go ahead.
Hello? If you can hear me.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Okay. If those of you out there listening, if you got to hear yourself on the phone, then, you know, just hang up. I have nothing to say to you. If you're welcome to speak your piece, but I'm not going to sit here and, hello, can you hear me? That I don't speak that language. So just go ahead and be kind enough and respectful to others to just state your purpose and be happy to listen in. But anyway, the real thing about civil rights and that wasn't going to be is not the central focus of my conversation today, but a warning to you. I think the worst thing we talk about when we really want to emphasize is Adolf Hitler and the things he did to people. We all rally around that and know how horrible. But racism is the Adolf Hitler in society. It's amongst us every day. Whether what it is, it's amongst us. So that's why we have to be careful, whether we become religiously motivated or whatever, or financially we think when we get a little money we're better than the next fellow. It's a responsibility of all of us to be cognizant, to realize that we are nothing more than soldiers in a line to make sure the things are done right, and that's about it. So that People's Walk is April 4th this year at the Hawaii State Capitol. And as Marsha said, you may join in the walk at any one of the five places at 3:15 p.m. The Cathedral of Our Lady of Peace in front of Fort Street Mall and Baritania Street. The Honolulu Police Department lawn at 801 South Baritania Street. The lawn in front of HGEA 888 Mililani Street. The lawn in front of Department of Education on 1390 Miller Street. That's right there. It's across from Queens Hospital. And the lawn at the Cathedral of St. Andrews at 300 Baritania, across the street from Capitol. And for wheelchairs and other slow walkers, that would be me. Anyway, now, again, thanks for joining in, and I'll be right back for a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the big time. See the ferocious lion, thrill to the fabulous monkey, laugh along with the hilarious clown. See that light in the spring circus.
makes his rounds. He's seen every town west of Mississippi. He's just a face painted all in smiles, jumping up and down and making people happy. Inside a shadow grows, he could let the newer know there's a lonely man inside. Life is a three-ring circus, all of the ups and downs of a carousel. Circus, just one little ride on the merry-go-round, going round and round and round and round and round. He does the dance like the minstrels did, just to please the kids and keep the people laughing. But no one knows that beneath the clothes and his turned up nose lives a lonely beggar. He needs the love he spreads around, but in life he's just a clown till they bring the curtain down. Life is a three-ring circus, all of the ups and downs of a carousel that I know so well. Life is a three-ring circus.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning again. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Caller, go ahead. You have a comment or question?
Hello?
Go ahead, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yes, it was racism that put me out on the street. This is homeless beneath again.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the cops, but the people here. If this were a different time, a different day, I'd have been out there on that march. But, you know, who am I locking arms with? You know, what cop that put me out on the street still to this day is going to be diverting traffic so that people on the walk are safe. The hypocrites. As long as I'm out here on the street, racism thrives in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
People know that I'm out here. People know why I'm out here. The fact that the racism by cops and others, it removed me from my family, took me from my father's love. I wasn't even able to go to his funeral because of the race trash here. Be proud of yourself, Hawaii. Be proud that this is who you are. And then you stand up and march down a street. What does that say? It means nothing. Your conduct speaks volumes. I'm out here broke because each time I've got to go spend my money to defend my name against liars. The impact that Rosa Parks had was what allowed the movement to succeed. And unfortunate for Dr. King, he left her there. It was the representative from Detroit, from Michigan, who pulled her out of that vat and took her, got her a job, and allowed her to live. And even there, she got her house robbed by thugs who had no clue who she was. People have to remember the whole story.
Well,
not
just speaking,
certain parts of it, the entire story.
Okay.
As long as I live here, and as long as I'm denied my family, racism thrives. I was lynched in Hawaii.
Okay, Denise, can you hear me?
Lynched.
So we're going to
Hawaii.
Okay. Thank you for calling in.
Okay. I want this to be a great day of remembrance.
Okay, Denise had to cut you off. It's just, you can't hear me, but we're not going to sit and just talk. So we'll try calling again if you like to. Anyway, I want to share something with you. We've talked about quite a few things, and many of them are my favorite subject, but they have a common theme, and that is the, you know, we've been following the Red Hill Fuel matter. And you know that we called for a hearing, and Mr. Gabbard, Senator Gabbard, and Chris Lee actually gave the hearing and convened a hearing. And you heard my description of it. It was an opportunity. It was more of an insult to me than anything, because of the volumes and volumes of missteps and information that shows that the United States Navy is reckless and is poisoning the environment with its nonsense. It has a deferment and the monitoring wells and monitoring the tanks, and we have yet to see the full impact. And unfortunately, you go to the legislators and you think, and they didn't bother to even have a public hearing or a public comment period, or didn't even declare that they would be filing a report so that the people could see. So it was something that leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But that we stop short right there and say, well, we can be vigilant. And so as a result, even in while guaranteeing with their khaki suits on and I guess wearing a uniform and wearing a badge and the honor and representing these United States or justice and right, I guess it escapes us who we really are and what the purpose is supposed to be. So when you come in and you march in and you lie and you have a vocabulary filled with words of technicalities and all, you know that you can conclude, like you and me, the layman, we know BS when we see it, no matter how it's presented, no matter how. It's still BS is BS because it has a stench to it. So I'm sitting there, and I think I pointed out to many of you that they declare that approximately 1.2 million gallons of fuel has leaked at various times. They quantify it. But on one single occasion, as we found in the records, they had a 1.3 million gallon, 300,000 gallon spill at one time. So that would have been 2.5 million gallons somewhere that's loosely running around in the environment out there. But they didn't tell us that. But these are men, and I watched with great pain to see this slideshow that they put on, and so like many of us out there, some of us get mad. I don't get mad. I go back to digging and figure, I know they're lying. I know it's the dog and pony show. So listen to this one. So I had gotten an email from a party that apparently felt the same thing that I felt in watching Gabbard and Chris Lee with this hearing. And apparently this party knew a little details, and so that party directed me. And this is not a reenactment of the Beverly Hillbillies. You know, where Uncle Jed shows up on TV and the opening scene is he fires a shot and hits the ground and the oil bubbles up. Believe it or not, I was able to follow that lead that source gave me, and went out to Halava, and the tip was, there is oil bubbling up out of the ground, and both state government, both federal government, the Army Corps of Engineers, and all know about it and isn't doing a damn thing about it. Nothing. So I start calling around, and I couldn't believe it myself, you know, initially. And so in watching the hearing, and I watched, and I thought, okay, I see. I'm going to watch and see if Gabbard or Chris Lee really take these folks to task, or is it going to be the same crap that, you know, we've come to learn. This is United States Navy. I'm Mike Gabbard, and I'm Chris Lee, and we, you know, we don't want to make any real problem, but it sure looked good for us, and thanks for bringing the documents in to us. So they permitted this, and I went out there, and you can look at some of the pictures at carolcox.com. In the Halava Valley, at the old animal quarantine station, there's the agricultural building there, state building, vector control. And in the parking lot, there are large blotches of tar-like substance bubbling out of the ground. And so in my initial inquiries, it was, well, we think what happened was someone dumped, this is the state presenting these answers, we think someone dumped a little tar and when they were building the parking lot, and some of the roofing material fell from the building and fell in the on the ground. Well, if that's the case, then this was years back. Someone should have cleaned it up, right? So this is the kind of lies and the information they were disseminating. So I was able to go to the HERE office and request some documents, and I had made that request, that formal request, and they actually gave them to me. And here's just the executive summary. And this was done by Kimura International, and Kimura was contracted by Alpha Engineering, Inc. to conduct a limited Phase 1 environmental site assessment for the Department of Agriculture. Now, by the way, for those of you that are interested and you have some problem, 586-4249. Write that number down, because what I'm finding, 99% of the environmental issues and concerns that you may know about or may have, there's a great chance, and I'm finding this out, it's repeating itself, that the Department of Health know about it, has been there at the site, documented it, and have generally a good record on it. So from now on, if those of you that see something of a magnitude of such as that, don't take it for granted. 586-4249. That's the HERE office, Hazardous and Evaluation and the Emergency Response. Make sure you call them and just ask them. You don't have to be fancy. Just say, if, for example, the Halava, you don't have to know the TMK and all that. Just say to them, do you have any information on the Agriculture Department property in Halava? Have you responded to any contaminant issues? So that's what I did. And in this report, this Phase 1 assessment and for the Department of Agriculture, animal located at 99941 Halava Valley Road, IA. The project site is identified as Tax Map Key 199010, Parcel 46. The state of Hawaii is current owner of the property. Now, this property that we're talking about, the United States Navy owned this property up to 1968. So therefore, it should have been identified as a FUD site, F-U-D, formerly used defense site. So that means there should have been a declaration and a history and all of that information and a clearance to the military through the Department of United States Army Corps of Engineer should have had this all documented, but for some reason, the lies that by not owning up to any of it, that way you can then say, we don't know. And this is what they've done here. So Kimura says in this, this is the executive summary, a black viscous tar-like substance was observed on the parking lot surface of the above-mentioned facility. The source of the substance is uncertain. However, the substance was previously analyzed for polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, total petroleum, hydrocarbons. And by the way, what I got from some of the state people was that, and follow this, we tested it and we found that it was not toxic or hazardous. How many of you out there believe that if you saw bubbling oil bubbling from the ground, and we're not in Texas now, we're not noted for our oil wells, so, you know, so for the, you newcomers, how many of you out there would be satisfied that tar flowing over the parking lot is not toxic, but could be a sinkhole or could one day collapse or create an explosion because or create a fire or just get on your car, or not toxic to humans or animals? Who in their right mind would have ignored the fact that the kolea, the plover, for example, is a bird, native bird, migratory bird, protected by federal law and state law? If there's no harm to the environment, then how do we explain that tar can lay on the surface of a parking lot and these animals are attracted to feed, to rest, or do other things, and not get injured by the tar? You would think that there would be some quick response, right? Well, no. This was back in 2003, and they have allowed this tar like substance. It's a byproduct of petroleum. You would think someone would have seen some urgency in the need to clean it up, to dig it up, and find out exactly how it was introduced and why it's there so that we could protect ourselves and protect the environment. So now imagine in 1968, this material was there. The report goes on, due to the material's physical characteristics, the source is believed to be a release from a low refined petroleum product such as commercial fuel oil, waste oil, or asphalt. Since the contamination at the site is known and suspected to have originated from a nearby source, the scope of this investigation was limited to on-site and geologically upgraded mica sources and not recommended, and not the recommended American Society for Testing and Materials, ASTM, search distance for usual phase. And guess what? They went through and ruled out any surrounding facilities like Grace Pacific. Yes, Grace Pacific had a release and a leaking tank, but they found that that material was restricted to the area underneath Grace Pacific tanks and other sources. So they also spoke to the fact that it was completely illogical to assume that a volume of this amount of material could have been a spillage from a roofing job. But these are the lies that are easily advanced and presented out there. So I watched these guys, and there was one young lady, you could tell she was well versed and well schooled, and I thought, wow, that lady paid attention in her class. She was probably valedictorian, and I was really impressed. She had the lingo, man, down, slick. You could tell she knew what she was doing. Well-oiled and well-versed. But the problem is, very evasive. And I'm sitting there thinking, my goodness, you know there's oil leaking and bubbling up, and you're sitting here blowing smoke. But if Gabbard and Chris Lee and the other legislators that sat there, they don't really know what was going on. They knew the game that they were playing, but they didn't care about what would be fleshed out in this process. So the state of Hawaii acquired the property in 1968 from the United States Navy. Navy property records show that the U.S. Navy owned the property from 1941, and that the earliest owner was the Emma Kalailoalani Nalani estate. Historical aerial photos taken in 1944 and 1952 show various structures situated DOA property and possibly at locations at present-day parking lot area. The buildings were demolished, and the DOA facility was constructed in 1968. So here we have untold numbers of thousands and thousands of gallons of fuel oil or tar-like substance migrating downhill from source areas up there, upgraded from the oil tanks and what have you in that area, or other sites that may have been dumped and allowed, or what have you. Who knows what the real thing is. But you wouldn't think that a spillage from a rooftop would find its way in a parking lot underneath and start to bubble up. You just can't accept that. Oh, I can't. Not what you can. And the United States Navy regional engineers do not have any knowledge of the operations that were performed by the Navy at the project site. But the United States Navy and others have done, they swore to us in those hearings that they have done a thorough search of the area, and they have identified at least 10 sites, unauthorized sites, that's what they call them, that were receiving fuel oil or contaminated materials that were used to clean when they clean the tanks out and what have you, or from leaks. So once again, this is Red Hill fuel facility having an impact on the environment, and yet there is this cover-up. And this report goes on. It talks about the limited database search was conducted for the subject property and the facilities located Mauka of the subject site. The database that were consulted included the national priorities list. And they were up there. Now, remember now, the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, those guys that we're supposed to, the last stop of trust and honesty and decency and integrity, forget it. They come, they plaster a good look and a good feel over situations and leave you and I try and interpretate numbers. Less than 1,000 parts per million, billion per, you know, and on and on and on. And they come to town, they get their per diem, they get all the fancies, they get to shop around and drive around, give us bogus reports, and tell us everything is fine, go back to the mainland, and then the lie is then perpetuates itself. So one 8,000-gallon bunker oil is registered to the DOHUST. These are them ruling out the various possible sources so that they didn't want to jump to conclusion. And as I've told you, Grace Pacific facility was located at 1300 Halaba Valley, was reported to the DOH Hazardous Evaluation and Emergency Response Office. Several investigations regarding the release were conducted. The investigation included contaminant delineation, soil remediation, and groundwater monitoring. Finding from the most recent investigation suggested that the contamination is restricted to Gray's specific facility. I offer that in detail so that you don't go away thinking that I'm jumping to conclusion. My conclusions that I'm drawing is based on this report, a scientific report that went to eliminate or assess the potential sources. So they ruled them out. The Kimura International concludes that the tar-like material was not illegally dumped onto the parking lot and is coming from below the surface. Several potential sources located upgraded were identified in the database. Kimura International recommends conducting a subsurface investigation to determine the horizontal and vertical limits of the material. If the material originated from an upgraded source, then the material would be found along the north end or the east ends of the property and pathway should be traced. The subsurface investigation will also indicate whether the material is limited to subject property and whether the material was on the property before DOA building was constructed. The elevation of the parking lot was approximately 70 feet above mean sea level in 1968. The topography changed in 1969 with the ground surface raised to between 85 and 90 feet above mean sea level. The depth of the material may be an indication of the time of release. The property was owned by the United States Navy from 1941 to 1968, the report goes on, and I've repeated this. Formerly used defense sites, FUDs, are supposed to be, and underscore this, formerly used defense sites are supposed to be assessed by the military for environmental issues. The Army Corps of Engineers did not list any FUDs in the Halava area. Kimura International had attempted to contact the Army Corps but could not speak with the FUDS program staff before completing this report. So imagine I listen to Polka's show in the morning and I on the way in and I hear him talking about the pollutants and that come accompany these big military operations or businesses, and it saddens me because it's a fact. They tell us they being the military and the legislators and state agencies and the EPA, they tell us they're good stewards of the environment. But if you're lying and you're not even doing your job to identify formerly used defense sites and the activities, and you hand it off to the state, and this is you want to talk about welfare mentality. This is this grand scheme of the welfare mentality. The state serves a role. In theory, when land is given back by the military, it should be benefiting the public in a sense. But if there's contaminants on it and they want to conceal that, this is what they do. They hand it off to a state agency or a city agency. And those agencies are not going to speak up because they're part of the conspiracy to conceal the contaminants, to conceal the activities that have gone on there and that poses a threat to human safety, human welfare, the environment. And they knowingly will lie and have lied, and in this case, a bigger lie. But even when the oil reveals itself by bubbling up on the surface of the parking lot, they still lie. They go out and they spend taxpayers' dollars to find out why the problem is there. This is 2003 now, and here it is 2014, and it's still there bubbling. And the sad part about it is that the health department is having to move, and a number of the agencies are having to scramble for housing to house their offices because with this transaction down at Kaka'ako, at Ward and Ala Moana, there's a need to vacate that building by some of the state agencies and other agencies and from other areas, and they're renovating this facility, the vector control building where this oil is bubbling up. They have them out there waiting around. Now, who would allow such a thing? Now, at the time, you Ernest Y.W. Liu, we know him is from the now serving as the director of the Board of Water Supply. But Ernest Lau was actually the man that originally, he was the head of DAGS. And it's just painful that the state health department issued a letter. And the letter is no further action determination. This was done in 2006 now. See, they went and did this study in 2003. So that means to get the funding, so they knew about it even earlier than 2003, because it takes some time to put it out to bid. First of all, to discover it and determine that you need to have it cleaned up or do an environmental assessment. So a couple years involved there. And so the state health department here office actually gave the decision no further action determination for tar-like material beneath vector control facility parking lot. Now, you would think someone would be concerned about a sinkhole, that building collapsing. Or imagine you driving through the parking lot and one day your car disappear with you in it. Talking about stuck. You would end up being stuck. But anyway, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about some other things related to that and share your opinions with me on, do you think that in that area, up in the Halaba Valley, we've already talked about the monitoring wells and all of that, but we also uncovered some interesting things. They actually buried the Department of Agriculture on that same site up in the general area of that area, buried malathion and DDT in shallow graves above the drinking water. We have those documents, and we like to share them with you. So tune in the next hour of the Carol Cox Show. You could also go and listen to this at KWAI 1080 AM live on the Internet. And please feel free to call in 524-1080.
Second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI.
should both be gone. Some people are made for each other. Some people can love one another for life. How about us? Some people can hold it together. I'm not trying now to end it all. It's just something new. It's just that I have
what
seen.
Have you seen?
Too many lovers' hearts lose their dream.
We won't lose.
Some people are made for each other. Some people can love one another for life. How about us?
If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Yeah, I played that for some of you that love yourselves or love others anyway. Nothing like a little champagne. But welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. Feel free to call in. I don't know if you want to join in to the subject of we're talking about pollutants and contaminants and people that will lie to you and swear to you because they have an education and a little authority. And a little authority and education goes a long way in this world today. You get to get a paycheck, and you get to be uniformed and do all of that and have the luxuries of life and lie to the rest of the population. And that's what we're finding here. Personally, I'm very leery of drinking the water in the Mililani area where I live because we know the contaminants. And reading some of these documents, I'm finding that there was a landfill they reference in Mililani. The Mililani landfill. So if anybody out there know that have some history of Mililani, where would this landfill be? But as I, before leaving the first hour, I told you about the fact that the Department of Agriculture actually buried malathion and DDT in, on the property at Halava. Now, let me just share with you, and if the, that caller, have, the Department of this is a May 24th. I will take the call first. Call if you can hear on the radio. Just go ahead and state your purpose. Good morning. Go ahead. Caller, go ahead. You have a comment, a question? Okay. Anyway, this situation, and we do apologize for the phone problems there, but again, there's no way that if you're listening to the radio, if we you hear us in the background saying, go ahead, just go ahead and we'll try to work through it. This is a letter, May 24th, 2005. Again, the Halava Animal Quarantine Station. And it has an EPA site, ID, HID 98073-6268. Here's the trouble. When you see the name EPA, you think, okay, they've given it the full look over, and it it goes on. This letter is to whom it may concern. This letter is to inform you that the Department of Health Hazard Evaluation and Emergency Response Office has reviewed the low priority status given to the site and has provided the following comments. Although the pesticides in question, malathion and tomato dust, were disposed of properly per EPA regulations at the time of burial, the HERE office requires that no excavation or construction work be performed near or around or in the pit should the cover of the site become disturbed in any fashion that causes contaminated soil to be brought to the surface. The HERE office should be notified immediately. Call a good morning. Go ahead with your comment or question.
It's poisonous,
sir. Yeah.
Call a go ahead with your comment or question. So anyway, that's the last attempt to do that. Please be aware, this letter goes on, please be aware that if future information reveals that contaminant exposure or above mentioned, I don't know about you, but isn't there something funny about this whole thing about everything was done according to the EPA rules and standards? Why would you be burying pesticides and malathion and DDT and tomato dust and other chemicals in an area, even if it was done according to the rules, when you know it is a critical area for the underground water is critical? We rely on that water for drinking. Why? Caller, go ahead. You have a comment or question? So anyway, let's just see here. This is, and if you really want to see something that's really bothersome, anyway, really bothersome, and that is, I'm reading these documents and. Folks, I said the Beverly Hillbillies earlier, that scene where they shoot in the ground, the oil bubbles up. I got to tell you something. There's something wrong here. Either the Beverly Hillbillies fathered a lot of these people in government or something. There's just Gomer Pyle and everybody. So You should. If you haven't frightened from previous experiences, you will be. This is a facility diagram where they buried the. Looked like some child scratched out, etched out this thing, drew a little sign. And this is how it's described. Now, the location, there's this sophisticated map, just a copy of a map. And then it says, it attaches facility diagram. This is something you would find in the caves of France or charcoal markings. That, and I don't mean to be insulting to our ancestors, but you know, these are people that went to school and went to college, and we're speaking a language now and able to write and what have you. The facility diagram, and I'm going to post this up on the web at carolcox.com. And if you don't get a laugh, or you start laughing, you might start crying. But here it is, a little graph that says kennel and office, and Halava Crusher Road, and the road. And they actually mark it by saying the pit is by the tree. Well, the tree is gone. And large rusted container, fenced area, burial pit is within this area. And then there's a tree. And then they say, see photograph. And if you look at the photograph, you wouldn't know if you were on your belly looking up or down, or if you were drunk or and just saw the world collapsing on you. This is what we do. And this is what they march into hearings and they say. Now, this is not the Navy now. This is the Department of Agriculture who authorized this and did it by as required by the EPA. The site visit to a Halava animal quarantine on December 29th, 1983, at 10 a.m., Daniel Chang made a visit to the Halava animal quarantine located. Mr. Chang was met there by Mr. Middleton and then proceeded to the burial area. Mr. Middleton indicated that the pesticides had belonged to the Department of Agriculture pesticides branch and that the burial was supervised by the pesticides branch. The pesticides that were buried were mainly malathion and tomato dust. Quantities are not known. So they don't know if they put a ton, half ton, 3 tons, or what have you. According to Middleton, the area surrounding the burial pit is currently being used to raise a few heads of cattle. However, Mr. Middleton indicated that the area may possibly be used to put kennels in the future due to the proposed H3, which would bisect the property. The pit area will not be dug up except if sewers or kennel facilities have to be installed in the area. In regards to DDT, some of the waste were company Unitech. He did not know the exact name of the company handled the disposal of the DDT and shipped to Oregon. Call a good
Hi,
morning.
Carol.
Go ahead. Good morning.
Uncle Joe here.
Yes, sir.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead, Uncle Joe.
Hello. I have a concern about the military and all the crap that they're doing, but I also have a concern about the Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
I remember back in the 70s when I used to travel out of state, they'd search my bags, and they still do, even if it's island to island. They search my bag for any whatever, but when I come back home, I just get on piece paper that sign that I'm not carrying any contrabands or anything like that. And I'm wondering, you know, are they doing this the wrong way? Should they search the bags over there? Because we found alligators and whatever and all these kinds of stuff that not supposed to be in paradise. And the latest is those frogs and those fish. These guys bringing frogs and fish and... How do you think the cookie frog came over here to swim? That's a long swim, unless he was walking on water. Anyway, that's my concern. Department of Agriculture. What kind of a bag check is that? On the way out? And not back on the way in? Anyway, it's something that needs to be addressed also. guess I know something wrong with the telephones today. Ever since Marsha joined us with the rally walk for the doctor. Anyway, take care. I'll see you later. Aloha.
Okay, thanks for listening in there. But all of you out there, if you just turn on your internet, you can hear, and it will work out. But we'll get over this. But as Uncle Joe said, that this thing about invasive species, I saw the frog story, and I wasn't overly excited or concerned. These frogs have been in this area. They've been introduced here years back, and not all of those species, but the poison arrow frog. You go up Monolua Valley and around Paradise Park, you could have found them back in 1990s or earlier. So, but it again, when I arrived here as a special agent, the Department of Agriculture, today they have a new look. But when I was here, Tish Uehara and can't think of the Pianaya and others were involved. And there's a commission, the Agricultural Commission, I think it's called. They set the rules. And they're not going to bulge in those times. And they were actually punishing agents that I tried to recruit to work with me to ferret out some of these animals. And as Uncle Joe mentioned, the issue was originally when I got here, it was alien species was just a talk. There was a few people speaking about it. And I was down in Guam standing there, and they were showing how the Guamanians and the environmental management was showing how they had wired this tree, one of the few trees that the bat and the Marianas crow would nest in or rest in or what have you. And they had put chicken wire, a very fine wire, and electrified it to keep the brown tree snake out. And so I'm standing there looking up at this tree, and I'm thinking, okay, today in Guam, this is the drastic measures they have to take. But I do know that in Honolulu, the Department of Agriculture allows anything and everything, and they have this program that you fill out a paper and you tell what you're bringing in. And I thought, this is just absolutely criminal. And you hear them all talk about, oh, our environment is fragile, irreplaceable, insensitive. And so what was happening, I returned and I'm thinking, you can go in any pet store and you can buy scorpions. You can buy frogs. You can buy snakes. You can buy helicopter fish. You can buy plecostomus. You can buy anything. And so in trying to talk with the agriculture people, and a very powerful group now, don't underestimate them. They dictate what goes on in that list, what's prohibited and what's not prohibited. Don't you kid yourself. And the way the agency is set up, it's so fragmented that you can't get anything done, because if you say we don't want this species in, then you got to go to the Board of Agriculture. And DLNR, fortunately, I was able to work with one of the supervisors at the time was Ronald Kama, who appreciated the need to look at these animals and try to keep some of them out. But it was a struggle, folks. And today I sit back and I see them. It's a kind of relieving to see some of the gestures that the Department of Agriculture, but in reality, as Uncle Joe mentioned, the frog, the koki. See, the koki came in and just potted plants. And that could have been stopped, but the Board of Agriculture and the Department of Agriculture such lame, useless people. Even today, they talk about, you know, they'll get a quick buzz on the, this is a bug that came in, and this is a bug that came in. We intercepted that. But the reality is they have no shame. They have dogs that they're supposed to take and sniff out. They don't tell you that the dog's got to be trained. They can only use them for so long. And that the monies were, some of the monies were diverted. Senator Noye got some of the money to bring in to fund the dogs at the airport. And they don't tell you the overtime. And it's just stupid that what's supposed to be. And now you got the alien species aggression to get out there and get everything that's alien. And it's few because you're going to get millions of dollars. But the reality is, as Uncle Joe pointed out, if you want to gauge how sincere, how true this program is or is not, just go to the airport and they still have an amnesty box. Or you declare that you're not bringing any alien species in. Give me a break. So what happened is that, and I'm not going to do the whole thing for you, but I was sitting there in my office at the federal building, and a call came in, and this is to illustrate to you how horrible it is when you deal with an agency that has a responsibility and they shirk it or they just blow it. Here's what they do. They call me up and say, well, we found a 6-foot alligator in the Monowili stream. It's dead. We don't want anybody to know, or the public to know, that it's here. This was at Ilalo Street. So immediately I'm thinking, this is a golden opportunity to educate the public about the dangers of importing and the dangers of these species being introduced to the wild. So quickly I called the various TV stations and newspapers and said, go to Ilalo Street and you'll find a 6-foot alligator. And if you remember, folks, that you look at that, just Google that in the alligator. And so they were horrified that anybody would tell the media that, because they didn't want the public to know that there was an alligator, it could hurt tourism. You see how dumb this whole thing is, and also it would hurt the pet trade. So we got past that, and the media did the story, and the next shoe to fall was a cougar up at Aina Haina. Gentleman walks in my office and says, he's bleeding, scratched up. Why are you bleeding and why you got bandages? Oh, we were trying to watch this house with a cougar, that someone imported a cougar. Really? You were sitting there watching him? Yeah, we parked our car right in front of his house and we walked up the hill and I fell in the lantana and scratched my arm. How do you plan on getting someone to behave in a fashion where you can observe them if you got a car that's clearly marked Department of Agriculture and they got a cougar that they've smuggled in, and they're not going to see you? Well, that's why we're here at your office. We want some help. So we go up to Aina Haina and do our little thing and talk to the guy, and sure enough, I was able to confirm that it was a cougar. And whistle, but I look around and the agent for the Department of Agriculture walked out and just left me. So I'm standing there on my own. I'm okay. And I'm able to whistle, and cougars whistle, or they have a call. And sure enough, the cougar presented itself in the window, and I was able to inform the guy that I was seizing it and that he had. But again, how did he bring it in? He brought it in on the plane by giving it ketamine and getting it groggy, put it in a case, and brought it home on the airplane. He found it being advertised in Rob's magazine. So anyway, I offer that is that he filled out the application and, the form that you declare when you get to the airport. But the problem is, didn't get in prosecution for lying. And And in that case, the Agriculture Department was at the time was Gary Moniz, and immediately wasn't to. Here's another occasion to seize to educate the public about import of, in, of alien species and the potential and how the system's not working. First thing out of their mouth was, oh, we got to take it to the airport and put it over there in the quarantine holding cell there, and we don't want anybody to know. And immediately I began to think, oh, no, you're not. This is under my jurisdiction, and so therefore we're going to – that is how you learn about the cougar. So this whole thing about alien species, snakes, lizards, piranha, if you Google piranha and state ag, you'll see there's a gentleman, I think he's been promoted now to a supervisor. And we go to Monowili Valley and to see some piranha that were being imported into the state through the mail. And we go, and I inform him, don't, when we go there, you know, be careful. Piranhas are not something you want to play with. You know, these are, so apparently he didn't pay much attention and went to dip it, and it bit through the net. And if you, some of you way back, you remember there's this gentleman standing with his uniform on and with this huge bandage around his thumb. So, in trying to take a bite out of crime with this alien species, snakes and all. And if you want some interesting reading, just go Google Carol Cox, Fish and Wildlife Service, alien species. And that'll give you a history of what this alien species thing is all about. And but a great bit of the alien species problems that we have now is due to decision-making and decisions made by the Department of Agriculture. So with the frogs, the Kochi frog, if the Department of Agriculture would have, in the simplest form, real simple, I'm saying really simple, if they had have isolated and identified that source, that nursery, and put that nursery on a list, isolating that nursery that none of its plants or if its purchase should be steamed or precautions taken, but instead they claim they didn't want to make a blacklist of sort. And so therefore, today the proliferation of the Kochi frog went through and around and no one knew. And if anyone have any story that contradicts that, I would love to hear it, and I will tell you, I have the documents that I have scanned from on the frogs from 1988, Mr. Fred Krause, who was working at Bishop Museum, and as well as DLNR, I was able to get those documents. So, but again, there's a big story when you talk about alien species, whether it's plants, or mammals, or fish, and all of that. So, we have small populations of garter snakes on the island and what have you, all because snakes at one time was imported. Caller, go ahead. You have a comment or question?
Just a comment, sir.
Yes.
I can, you were just talking about the landscape guys, the nursery guys.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a lot of the these invasive species, whatever they may be, amphibians or bugs or, you know, whatever, are coming in from the Big Island. Would you say that?
I wouldn't dare to go that far, but yes, they're being shipped in around the islands, yes.
Well, most of the stuff you see starts out at the Big Island, and then it spreads to Maui, and then it spreads to us. So I would make a law that the nursery guys, under a big penalty, they have to, like, triple-check every single product that they bring into the state. You know what I mean? And then
yes.
The inspectors over there should be, like, instead of coming once a month to the nursery, they should be coming every week to the nursery and checking around in that area, right? You know, close proximity, where the whatever invasive species, they will be within that, you know, maybe 200 yards, 300 yards, half a mile, and if they search the area, they may be able to get them right then and quarantine the area, that area, right, that they're, the nursery that has maybe the, where the invasive species emanated from. So there's got to be a little bit more care taken, mm-hmm. and the people that are making the problem are basically, I think, are the nurseries, because you don't, a lot of stuff doesn't emanate from Oahu. We right. must have a better kind of inspectors here on this island mm-hmm. than the outer islands. Wouldn't mm-hmm. you think so?
I've seen both ways, and you're right. A number of the species that come, you know, do originate from there. But again, it's throughout the islands, you know, the species containment. We know the big island, the frog, for example. But you also have the frog here, so it just depends. I think the agriculture department needs to be more aggressive and not be reluctant to identify areas that are nurseries that are contaminated and abandon this thought that it's a blacklist.
Well, you remember about, I don't know how long ago it was, it recently that they cut back on the inspectors? And that really blew my mind. I'm going, man, these guys, our first defense, if there was 20 inspectors, it was down to 10 or something. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have the money to protect our, you know, our property, which is the islands. You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense. Whoever did that reduction of them guys ought to be fired.
Well, there's a guy named Neil Abercrombie in most recent time that told us that he had a surplus. So
yeah.
I always say to people, you know, you might be impressed with this political nonsense, but just look back and take a gander at the whole picture. Who in their right mind will tell you we have a surplus and things are going to pot in the handbasket? I mean,
I heard that this surplus is evaporated, though, huh?
Well, if it's a lie in the beginning, you know how easy lies dissipate, huh?
Yeah, the guy, the lies are a dime a dozen for this guy.
Yeah.
Abercrombie.
Yeah. But, the issue is in the root of the problem lies with the Department of Board of Agriculture and how that thing is loosely run, first of all. And they got dogs there, right? We've got funding and the dogs, but if you were to know the truth about that program, it was very, very poorly run, and, you know, you can't run the dogs every day.
Yeah, believe it. Do dogs smell frogs? Do dogs smell insects?
Yeah, well, that's my point. You see,
that's what I mean.
You know,
dogs are for animals, rats or rabbits.
Yeah, like the old joke says, you know, a guy could tell exactly where he's so efficient, he could tell which state a duck come from, right? But
I mean, you know, I've been here 50 years, and I've seen so many things come here that have been so destructive. You know, I mean, it won't be long before this island is really in trouble. We have to see, the more these invasive species, that means the more insecticides or the more poisons we have to use, and the more time and money that we have to use to try to eradicate them. Mm-hmm. So like I say, the nurseries should be the first defense. Them guys, especially if they're found that something is emanating from their nursery, there should be a big fine, like 50 grand for every day that we have to search the area to get rid of them. You know what I mean? Because yeah. if you could find within a week or 2 weeks that there's something emanated from this one area, they could probably, you know, contain it. But otherwise, they just keep shipping stuff without the proper, you know, inspection. It's a losing battle.
Right. Well, and you're right. One of the problems is, let's take the import of Christmas trees, right? Now, that in itself has a tremendous amount of potential for introducing alien species, right? But what we've gotten the mode of is... it's as if the feel good. Oh, here's the Department of Agriculture that caught another alligator lizard, right? And in a shipment of this, right? Or hay being imported. Why isn't it a situation where we farm hay here, alfalfa here, Christmas trees here? If we
definitely
that, right,
we got the land
and encourage that. But instead, it's cheaper to bring in a container filled with. And anybody in their right mind would know that it would be impossible to ferret out and screen for every species.
Like I said, we're fighting a losing battle. We are the subsidized farmers, like you said, to grow this hay, grow the Christmas trees, keep growing. Basically, let's grow everything that we possibly can, even if we have to spend money to subsidize the farmers or start these, you know, these businesses up, even on a losing the beginning, but in the long run, we're going to stop basically a lot of this stuff coming in and destroying, you know, our environment.
But give us money, send money, and you, that's the whole theme right now, you know, of the environmental community, the alien species community. Oh, we need $5 million. No, you need to tell the governor and the legislators that when you confirm someone heading the agriculture department, that party is interested in protecting the environment.
Yeah, that's his main mission.
Period. But instead, special interests. So they can get $50 billion thrown at these alien species efforts. But the problem is, they're looking for one species and 10 others are growing. They're driving by 10 others.
Yeah.
The trees. Why aren't we just seeing just a barrage of...
They got to revamp that inspection case, but they got to get some people that are more competent, care about what the hell they're doing. And the bottom line is, we're losing. I keep saying it again and again. We're not winning against these guys.
Well, you take, for example, we brought in the guinea grass, right? The molasses grass. And those grasses that we brought in. And so, as you said, they have to throw more chemicals at them, right? The egret. We're wanting to kill out the egret now. You see, but it was the politicians and the managers, the environmental managers, that brought in the egrets over the years to eat the bugs. I mean, you follow?
Yeah, but it eats all the baby birds, the endangered species.
Yeah.
The people, this is not for, they don't investigate, they don't research what these animals that they do bring in, mm-hmm. what the end result would be. If they don't have the species that they want to eat preferred, they start eating everything.
Right. And unless we deal with the mindset that people like, they bring in their animals that they are familiar with, right? Horned toads and turtles. You know, the slider, the pond turtles, for example. You remember you could buy one for 25 cents or the, you know, where are they now? They're out in the wild, right?
That's for sure.
And you know, so it's a big lie being perpetuated about this thing about whether it's the native people or the native flora and fauna. There's been the wrong people managing it and a lie being told every time they step up, wake up in the morning and walk into their office. Well, their whole purpose is to generate revenue.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the fragile environment, irreplaceable environment, Hawaii's sensitive environment. Not a damn thing to do with that.
Yeah, what we got to do, Carol, is we have to elect politicians that know the problems that we have and find solutions for them. And not just say, oh, I'm going to do this, that, and the other, make a better road, more building, this, that, and the other. But we got to protect our aina, you know, how it's being attacked by these invasive species. And just elect people that have got a head on their shoulders and know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah. Well, the environment has been, has been pimped.
Beyond. It's in the back seat and it's losing.
Yeah. it sure can get attention, but when the truth is told, there has been such lies
they're all phonies. They talk about they're going to do this, that, and the other, and they never pull it off.
Yeah, and so now there's this a grand effort to shoot off all of the native species. But, you know, like the bulbul, give me an example. A lot of the species are imported here, bird species, right? Great many of them. They're protected by state law, right? So which one of these species are going to be? And I love birds, but you got the red-vented bulbul, the whiskered bulbul, you got the saffron finch, you got the African green canary, and all, right?
The white eye, yes.
The white eye, and so the white eye was imported, remember?
Yeah, he was a pretty bird, but he does peter out. They all do peter out of their fruits.
So, again, agriculture department. If you go right now and go take a look at the list of species that are permitted to be brought into and imported into Hawaii, and look at the and try to find a list that shows the ones that were taken off that list and prohibited.
I don't know what to say, man, because like I'm a farmer and I'm impacted by these things all the time, especially the insects. Mm-hmm. It's like insane. You know what I mean? It's one thing after another. Every year I got a new bug, a new problem to take care of, and now I can't grow squash because of this, because of that one worm. I can't grow papayas because they're biting them all up. It's a losing battle being a farmer.
Right, and so, again, we had the people in place. We had an army of people that we paid to the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, in the fisheries. We have Toao and Taapi, even whether it's aquatic. So the entire thing. The other day I saw them introducing Varna in Kaneohe Marine Base, right? And saying that it's going to eat up the foreign algae or the limu. What does that mean? Well, that means at some point, California, for example, had to have sent out teams of people to smash Varna because the predators of Varna were not numerous enough to keep up with the population. You follow?
Yeah, well, most of the time when they do bring in something to take care of something else, once the something else has gotten taken care of, what's that bug or that bird or that one other thing, what is he going to do? He's going to start attacking something else that you don't want him to attack.
Right. Well, I offer that because to bring up this point, and I'll let you go. The point is our management of the resources. If we're going to bring in the Varna to eat the algae, maybe there were native species that would have eaten the algae, but we allow gill netting, we allow pumping sewage in the water, we allow runoff, we allow, you know.
Yeah, we changed the whole ecosystem.
Right.
You know, it's unbalanced, and that's why all these things proliferate. You know what I mean?
Right. And so we get caught up into this romantic feel-good moment that, oh, bring in this species.
Yeah, we've done something. But it's a vicious circle that we've got ourselves in.
That's right. Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, we'll talk to you later, brother.
Aloha.
Have a good one.
All righty. Take care. Anyway, we don't want to pretend to know it all here, but I can give you some insight that overnight you'd change your thoughts about this whole process called good government. Because it's what government is in this state and many other states. It's a means of creating jobs and an economy for those selected few. But overall, we have now become, and way back I used to read about things, and I think you're going to be able to see a certain tree because it's going to be grown in a garden. It won't be out in the wild. We're going to be seeing that. And because we build and we build and we try to build and we build and we continue. And at the same time, our mantra is we must protect Hawaii's fragile ecosystem. You know, this is one reason you should not allow people to do drugs. Not to say that the politicians are all on drugs, but it's that ability to escape reality, those that take drugs. So this is what our politicians do. They try to tell us, they try to escape the moment by filling the air with nonsense about alien species, about we're going to throw $5 million at the alien species. We're going to do something to poison the rats. And we're going to do this and we're going to do that. But the reality is we have one man in vector control to deal with rats. It's restaurants, roaches. But they will do many things when it comes to human food sources. If you go into a restaurant and you show a picture on TV of roaches and all crawling on the table, oh, you're going to get results. But to say that a species is being impacted, there's ants, for example, that causing problems with some of the nesting birds, ground nesting birds. Well, what do you do? How did the ants get here? What were they brought in on? Our military traverses the world's oceans. Men go abroad, go ashore, come back. Various trees and plants being brought in on ships and planes and what have you. And so we have to become realistic and either understand that alien species are here to stay, because when we're looking in the mirror and we're sitting on TV and on radio and talking through the microphone and talking about alien species, that's what we are. And we brought our ways with us, and we brought this, and we want to have memories of home that we bring with us, and we want to bring the poinsettias here to remember how Christmas was in Massachusetts or wherever, you know, in California. So we bring the poinsettias. We bring the roses, a rose a day for the loved ones or what have you. Each of these species poses a great chance, presents a risk, whether it's a scale or a mite or an aphid or an ant or a slug. All of these are ways that we don't want to abandon when we move to a new land presents a problem. All of them. And so that's the way it is. And so anyway, we got off on that subject, but this thing on the Malathion and the DDT, I want to just read some of these letters to you and say to you that we need to really, really worry. Here's another one to a letter back to the Halava Quarantine Station on 29th December. This gentleman made a visit, and they don't know the amount of DDT or the amount of contaminants, and it was buried in a Daniel Chang is in a conversation with his supervisor. Brian Choi inquired about the control of state of Hawaii owned lands. Mr. Chang asked Mr. Choi if the land owned by the state and being used by the various departments, whether the owner of the land is the jurisdiction of the department. Mr. Choi informed Mr. Chang that all state land is listed and controlled by the Department of Land and Natural Resources. But where are they? You know, here's another. Chang stopped by at Unitech Environmental Service after the site visit to Halava Quarantine Station. Chang and Harold inquired about the disposal of DDT waste from the Department of Agriculture Halava Animal Quarantine Station. Mr. Harrell indicated that he recalled picking up some waste from the Department of Agriculture and that he would check their records to make sure. But again, most of this was situated over drinking water. And here's a letter. Pesticides burial does not pose a hazard to environment at the present time. At the present time. What does that mean, at the present time? That means because it was put in containers that are, the integrity of those containers are pretty good today, but in 10 years they'll degrade. So is that what they mean? And they're situated, these sites are buried over drinking water. So that brings me to my point of don't trust these numbers. And when they say, well, we didn't find this in the drinking water, but what we did find was this, this, and this. But if they're not testing for malathion and testing for tomato dust and testing for DDT, because they don't know that DDT was buried. They don't know that malathion was buried and now possibly eroding and leaching into the ground. Into the groundwater. The method of disposal, and this is always tricky, the method of disposal was in accordance with EPA regulations for acceptance and recommended procedures for disposal of pesticides. It's always one of those letters as if that's a guarantee that we're able to go home and feel safe at night because of that's what they do, right? So one area out there in Brewer, 25,000 square feet area they had. And in that document that I read, they allow, the site was Brewer Chemical, previous pollution from disposed pesticides and coral rock cavities. Now, listen to this. This is out in Eva Beach now. These are the Department of Agriculture and State Health Department managing these. Previous pollution from disposed pesticides in the coral rock cavities of the other data, other side of Brewer Chemical's property not observed. These rock cavities in the coral beds were observed to be filled with water that had active algae growth taking place. Brewer Chemical Company has made a large sump, about 25,000 square feet, that seems to be able to intercept all of their pesticide waste. And that percolates down to the groundwater. This is other people that go off and get college degrees. We hire them, and this is what you got. And how do they mark the spot so that you can use it for reference later if you became concerned? They put on a map, and it was buried by the tree. Isn't that funny? Well, you can trust them, but I don't. And that's the way it is. And next week we're going to be talking about quite a bit of stuff with DHHL, Hawaiian Homeland. Boy, do I have a bucket full of things. But there was a recent filing here, a petition of a trucking company to stay enforcement to remove this trucking company trespassers until the Hawaiian Homes Commission issues a request. But here's one of the interesting things. In this filing, the attorney wrote, moreover, Daryl Young, deputy to the chair of Linda Chen, administrator of the land management, both provided inaccurate and false statements to the commission at the commission's last meeting, where they both stated that there is no disposition for Chad Soares. Attached are copies of the April 28, 2011 request. So things are starting to bubble over, folks, and I think we see the HCDA in the news talking about they need to do this and do that. I think these new revelations and the new actions that are about to take place, you're going to be entertained, and I think you might find some relief. It's my prediction, and I don't have the time to go into it now, but hopefully things work out the way, and we're going to be talking bribes and under-the-table pay and hazardous materials. I talked to the state, and the material, the calcium hydroxide, is considered to be hazardous now because it has been exposed to the weathers, and there's about, I estimate personally, about 13 tons of this material just sitting on DHHH land, and they didn't know about it, but boy, can they see dust flying from a crusher, and they're right on top of the people and gonna bust them. Johnny on the spot. Well, I believe the DHHL now is caught between a rock and a hard place, and I'm going to hopefully help that hard place become more harder. So we'll see you next week. Take care. Thanks for joining. Hey, and don't forget to join, if you'd like to, the People's Walk on April 4th, 2014. This is in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King. And can you believe that he was only 39 years old? Imagine what could have happened if he was with us still. But anyway, we'll see you next week. And thanks for joining the Carol Cox Show. And you can listen to all of the shows 24/7 now at KWAI1080AM.com. And do join us, and we apologize for the technical problems on the phone, but we're getting there. Can't be perfect. Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.